Okay, good morning, everyone. Welcome. We're so pleased to have you join us early on a Saturday morning. This is our workshop on engaging new audiences with environmental journalism. Your moderator team here has worked very hard to create a fun and useful experience for you where we can all learn from each other. My name is Amelia Ascari, and I have traveled to this conference from the Great Lakes State of Michigan, where I teach environmental journalism at the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor. And I'm going to start by giving you an overview of how we're going to make the most of our time together this morning. In our search for ways to expand the audience for environmental journalism, we are going to highlight four non-traditional approaches to gathering and presenting news. They are artificial intelligence, newsletters, vertical video, and poetry slash clubs slash events. And we have some interesting experts for you. Why is it important for journalists to try to reach for new ways to find more audience for our work? Because whatever we're doing now is missing a lot of people. These are statistics about adults in the U.S. from the annual digital news report produced by Reuters in collaboration with Oxford University. So we have room for improvement. Now, you might be thinking, okay, but what are we doing up here with slides? We hate PowerPoints at SEJ. We don't do this. Never fear, this is actually something called Pecha Kucha. It's a fast-paced, entertaining talk format that's kind of a cousin of TED Talks. Images advance every 20 seconds, so let's have fun with this. So each of your four moderators today is going to give a brief talk introducing our topic. And then we're going to encourage everyone to help us shape the rest of the conversation this morning by sharing post-it notes on the big swaths of paper around the room. There are questions that we need your help answering, and they're right there too. This is my somewhat scruffy kitchen table back in Michigan. After we do this work with the post-it notes, we'll invite you to sit down with us at these round tables and meet some experts who are eager to exchange ideas with you and just have fun chats with you. So I will moderate the table focused on artificial intelligence and how journalists can use it to find new audiences. It's a new idea that really fascinates me, even though I've been a journalist for a long time and a member of SEJ for a long time. I'm lucky to have studied information technology and work at a university that's pioneering in the use of artificial intelligence. So what is this new kind of artificial intelligence known as generative AI? It moves beyond search to be able to create novel content, to write, to summarize, to demonstrate a degree of creativity. Many experts say it's as revolutionary as the invention of the internet. Why should journalists care about AI? In a December 2023 opinion piece in CNN.com, here's what Bill Gates said. We are at the beginning of a huge technology transition right now. This is an exciting and confusing time, full of uncertainty. AI is about to accelerate the rate of new discoveries at a pace we've never seen before. So Bill Gates' company, Microsoft, owns half of OpenAI, one of the leading AI companies, so he will make money here. Perhaps that's a reason to be skeptical of his grand pronouncements, definitely. Yet, Neiman tells us that some great journalism is being AI-powered already, and we want to take part in that revolution. So I have invited this person to sit down at my roundtable with you, He had to leave for an emergency, but he will join us by phone and Zoom. He is a fascinating person, a serial entrepreneur, a venture capitalist with experience in television and magazine publishing. He's also on the board of Outward Bound. So John's latest project is Latimer, a new AI tool nicknamed Black GPT in recent articles published about it in Forbes, Business Insider, and other places. Latimer is an AI tool trained in diverse perspectives. Other AI tools like ChatGPT are trained on the entire internet, which is problematic. Humanity's collective sexism and racism and other isms have been illuminated by recent experiments with ChatGPT. Here's an example from the Washington Post last November. Sorry, Megan and Mia and Abby, but it apparently only men play soccer and only women clean houses, according to generated AI images. So now, how could we, using and amplifying more diverse AI tools like Latimer, help environmental journalists? Well, I believe Latimer and some other tools like it could help us improve our reporting and possibly create more credibility. with certain audiences. The other very interesting person I've invited to sit at our table who is here. Thank you, Matt Post, a Yale Law student and former school board member. If his face looks familiar to you, it may be because following the 2018 shootings at Florida's Parkland High School, Matt was among the youth from other parts of the country who stepped forward to organize the March for Our Lives gun control movement. Since then, as a member of Maryland's Montgomery County School Board, Matt has been one of the creators of a tool called The Local Lens. Make sure to include the if you Google it. It's an AI tool that summarizes recordings of local public meetings around the country. The Local Lens isn't the only tool attempting to do that. The Associated Press and Michigan Radio and NPR station actually based on my campus also have experimented with a similar tool, but the Local Lens is tracking 9 times the number of meetings that the Associated Press is able to track with its tool currently, and many of those meetings touch environmental topics. So have you heard of the term ghost newspapers? It's used by some analysts to describe small news outlets that have shrunk so much that they can no longer cover meetings. There's also, of course, news deserts. Local Lens and similar tools can help environmental journalists monitor meetings and tune into stories that matter to people in those communities where they may have tuned out on local journalism. To be clear, of course, AI can be used in evil ways. So what I am saying is maybe while we're fighting AI-powered misinformation, we should also look for ways to use AI to make us better at reaching new audiences. As journalists, we bring skills that will help us do that. Thank you.
No, Julie.
I'm Julie Halpert, and I'm new to the world of Petra Kucha, so bear with me if I'm a little bit off. This is a little stressful for me. I'm here to talk about a pivotal way that environmental journalists are attracting new audiences to the stories where the journals isn't at the mercy of editors to assign stories. They're creating their own content. First, a bit about me. I thought I'd start with a photo of one of my earliest press passes taken in the big hair days of the 80s. 2 years after this photo was taken, I became part of a group of journalists who founded SEJ in 1990. Amelia and I met through SEJ and planned the organization's second annual conference in 1992. I'm thrilled to be here 34 years later and seeing SEJ continue to thrive. I gained my first experience covering the environment in 1985, working for an investigative environmental trade journal called Inside EPA, published by Inside Washington Publishers, which is still successful today. And as a congressman grilled EPA staff in a crowded hearing room about what I'd uncovered on skimping waste cleanup standards, I realized the power of the press. I was hooked. I knew this job was for me. After a few years, I decided I wanted to begin writing for more mainstream news outlets and left my DC job for freelancing. I started covering the intersection of the environment and the automotive industry for Newsweek and the New York Times, expanding my beat to many other issues from modern parenting to retirement, education, and mental health. And these are some of the dozens of publications where my work has been featured. These are some publications I've written for that have either stopped using freelancers or disappeared altogether. And many times I was a regular contributor to a publication that folded, leaving me scrambling to find other clients, or some publications slashed their freelance rates. Other times an editor who gave me stories left and their successor never returned my emails. I'm constantly hustling to get my pitches accepted at the mercy of editors to improve my stories. I've had many great ideas that elicit no response, and it can be really frustrating. There's something empowering about creating your own platform to publish those stories and maybe even be financially successful in the process. Could this be an option for you? Let's learn more. Substack is the runaway example of success. It's a platform that allows content creators to start their own newsletters and either offer it for free or charge a subscription fee ranging from $5 to $50. Substack makes its money by keeping 10% of the subscription fees. You can see success with unique visitor numbers here. There are more than 17,000 writers who get paid for their newsletters published on Substack. It's valued at $650 million, up from $48 million in July 2019. This chart shows the number of paying subscribers has continued to grow rapidly from just 11,000 in 2018 to over 500,000 in February 2021. Axios reported it's now 3 million. As you can see here, 10 content creators are bringing in millions of dollars for their Substack newsletters. No small accomplishment. Even if these authors are likely outliers, perhaps that can be a source of inspiration to you who are considering taking the plunge. I'm eager to get tips from our panelists on ways to maximize your income. So Substack has seen a variety of its incredible newsletters take on all facets of the climate crisis. Here are the top 10 ranked by subscription rate. Not surprisingly, author and climate activist Bill McKibben made the list. The range of topics and content was so impressive. One of our panelists, Emily Atkin, has the most popular climate change newsletter on Substack. Way to go, Emily. Mm-hmm. Emily's Substack newsletter, Heated, about the climate crisis, has approximately 90,000 free subscribers and over 4,500 paid subscribers. Emily has been a reporter for 13 years and has been covering climate change at the national level for 10 years. Before launching Heated in 2019, she held staff positions at the New Republic, Sinclair Broadcast Group, Think Progress, and Law 360. The other platform we'll be discussing is Ghost, a nonprofit. Ghost describes itself as a platform that focuses on building open source technology for journalists. It's a publishing and blogging platform, which also provides a free application similar to the way WordPress does. Here you can see how it operates in comparison to WordPress. And here's some data on Ghost. There are 21,500 active people creating newsletters on their platform and 3.1 million installs. I must admit, I was clueless about what these other numbers mean. I learned that run rate is projected revenue based on current performance. That number is 6.5 million. Churn is the percentage of subscribers lost per month through unsubscribing or canceling, 3.5%. Yesenia Funes, our other panelist, launched her newsletter, Possibilities, on Ghost in June 2023. It's a creative climate newsletter that's written in diary style, featuring stories she's read that week and including her own art. Yesenia has been an environmental and climate journalist for 10 years. Possibilities was mentioned in a Sierra Club article last year as a must-read newsletter for the climate curious. Emily and Yesenia have done an amazing job of producing and publishing engaging articles that offer different and important perspectives. But in addition to appealing to journalists, these types of newsletters help attract a broader audience to environmental stories, those who may not be a fan of traditional media. In the next slide, you'll see an article by Emily that reached over 150,000 views received. Emily started Heated because after many years of climate and political reporting at mainstream publications, she was getting frustrated. Editors kept rejecting or tweaking her story pitches to fit their idea of what a climate story should look like. And she was starting to think that maybe her ideas weren't very good. But she knew her ideas were good. She just wasn't getting the opportunity to put them to the test. She created Heated because she wanted that opportunity. Here's another story of hers. Neiman Reports calls Heated climate coverage that engages audiences without overwhelming them. It tells stories that expose and explain the powerful forces behind inaction on climate change and show readers explicitly what must be done to fight it. It seeks to help readers understand the climate crisis is not the fault of powerless individuals, but that of individuals in control of powerful systems. Here's a compelling article Yesenia wrote for Atmos, her previous employer. She had her own newsletter when she was at Atmos, so she was hopeful she could translate those subscribers into new ones. She wanted to maintain a regular voice and presence, especially given how freelance, as I can tell you, can be up and down. Here is a piece she wrote, providing her take on Biden's new rules to encourage more EVs and the limitations of that approach. Yesenia said she likes the Ghost platform because it doesn't put her values in question. The newsletter isn't her only source of income. She spends about 5 hours a week on it and juggles it with writing and editing assignments. So here is contact information for all of us. I'm really excited for our discussion with Emily and Yesenia. I'm looking forward to learning about the many ways they've been successful in publishing on their own platforms and how they've been able to attract new audiences. I expect you'll get great advice on how the process works, and I'm super excited to hear your questions.
So this is Pizza Coyote. Yes, she is a metaphor for like how human encroachment has like affected wildlife and whatever, but she's also a metaphor for adaptability because you guys all live in a very competitive environment. And when there's bunnies, Pizza Coyote eats bunnies. And when there's pizza, she eats pizza. So when I say vertical video, I'm basically talking about TikTok, Instagram Reels, and Shorts. So vertical video is this great unexploited niche. There's gajillions of people viewing it, but you know how hard it was to staff this panel because there's so few journalists actually using it. So listen, if you want to be the best journalist on TikTok of your niche, you won't have that much competition. So I'm Kristen Hugo. I'm probably the best bone-focused account on TikTok. It's called Roll Bones, 209,000 followers. And my job is I'm writing a book about dead animals. Yes, for real. And I do lots of social media. And my co-host here is Lucia Torres. So she is a video producer for Manga Bay. And you can take pictures of this. I also have a business card bookmark. Yeah, and so I don't do very much YouTube, so talk to Lucia more about that. Okay, what makes good content? So consider your goals. Metrics are not your goals. They're supposed to be like the best you can do to measure your goals. And then there's style and substance, just like writing in any other art. You can do something really well, but if you're talking about a nothing burger, then who cares? And if you have a really good thing to say, but you're not saying it well, again, who cares? So goals. What are your goals? It can be anything you want it to be, obviously. If you are working for a place, you might want to like talk with your coworkers. If it's viewership, oh my gosh, TikTok is amazing for that. If it's fun, I love it too. It can also be horrible for people. If it's money, not really great. If it's community, I think it's great. So 99% of what you need to know about how to make good news TikToks are things you already know because you are all journalists. Are you making stuff that is newsworthy? That is, what is it, timely? Is it interesting? Is it useful? And again, are you bringing it to the public in a way that is consumable for them? So most of what you need to know, you probably already know. One big difference, though, is that people are very, very impatient. And it's, I don't mean that in a rude way. I mean, like, we want to be respectful of their time. Imagine that you're standing in line. There's 20 people behind you. The bus comes in 5 minutes. We all have to buy our ticket for the bus. Within the next 5 minutes, we have to wait 2 hours. Do you spend 4 hours and 59 seconds going, hello, how are you? And repeating yourself? No, people will kill you. So there's a ton of people there. So TikTok is my favorite. It's got 1 billion. Instagram sells 1.4 billion. And these are pretty recent numbers. Consider that TikTok is banned in China and India. And that's like, I don't know, like a third of the planet. And we still have 1 out of 7 people on the planet on TikTok. And yes, a lot of people get their news there. Facebook, more, Twitter, TikTok, LinkedIn, Nextdoor, et cetera. And I think that more people would if there were more good journalists on it. And there are definitely a handful. I can give you some recommendations. I love the Washington Post. They always have such fun TikToks. Very viewable. So TikTok stats. So these are like the percentage of the people in the different age ranges. As you can see, it skews very, very young. What exactly are you going to do with that information? Like, are you going to make it a little bit easier to consume? You don't really need to. I wouldn't look too hard into these sorts of things, like the age and the gender. For example, 75% of my viewers are female, but I don't make like content for females. I make content about bones. And apparently women love bones. And so like, I don't know, you find your audience. You don't worry so much about that type of like demographic stuff. So how do you make them? So I can talk to you more about this at the table, but it is very easy. I really encourage you just to try it. You don't even have to download a second app. You can do it in the app. I think a 12-year-old could learn it in an hour. Is it worth your time? Okay. I think yes. Obviously I'm here to tell you that vertical video is lovely. It's not necessarily for everybody. You're going to get more eyes on your content by how much it's worth. People used to say, oh, you should make 3 videos a day. If they're good videos, that is a full-time job. And of course, you're going to get more followers. Follower counts go up. They don't go down. So I'm just doing this as a hobby. I've been doing it for 4 years, 209,000 followers. Okay, so I used to work at this place. It's been around for 23 years, and it was 10 people full-time, plus mostly freelancers writing it, 7,000 paid subscribers. And then obviously I haven't made very much money on TikTok. And I have a slide on that, but if you're looking for viewership, if that's your goal, oh my God, yes. And here's an example of something that I would not be happy if this was me. This person is happy. So there aren't a lot of people who have like data on what their return on investment was for spending time trying to promote something. You know, everyone's like, oh, if you're writing a book, oh, you should get on Book Talk and stuff. One person did. She made an equivalent of 41 cents an hour. So our next person, Lethea, she's here with Manga Bay, which is an environmental and conservation organization that's very international. It's all over the world. And they do video on YouTube and TikTok and Instagram and all sorts of stuff. And you can pitch them. So they do 3 main types of vertical videos. Field notes, which is a journalist like kind of doing that. Short news, so that like it's a fully produced for the vertical video, and then teaser clips, which is like basically a commercial for a longer video. I do encourage you to, I mean, once you're already out there and you have the knowledge and you can go and make it, and you're covering something in the field, you know, sticking your arm out and doing one of these is not going to be that much more work, and it can get you so much more views. So you can pitch these to Lethea, you can talk to her, they do it all over the world, Africa, India, Southeast Asia, oceans, on lots of topics as well. So parting advice, have lots of fun. Nobody's going to have the same, this is very, very new ground. No one's having the same experience as you. When you get advice, take it with a grain of salt. So much of it is just people just making it up because there's no one who knew what to say. Always make sure that your content is quality, assuming that's part of your goal. And then last part, it's easy peasy lemon squeezy. Like, it's really not that hard. You can do it. I promise you're not allergic to videos. That's all.
Thank you so much. Don't worry, we'll have time for your questions. Don't worry. Okay, this is complex. Go, Michael.
All right, College Debate Voice. So I'm Michael Levitin, the Community Outreach Manager at High Country News. I'm standing in today for Rachel Glickhouse, who is the Director of Editorial Partnerships at Grist. In our group, we also have Leah Larson, the Salt Lake Tribune's water and land use reporter, who is also part of the Great Salt Lake Collaborative. And today we're going to talk to you all about creative ways to get your journalism in front of new audiences. So some places you might encounter Grist journalism would be a national publication like Wired, Popular Science, a local print outlet like Savannah Monitor, Morning News, NPR is Here Now, Apple News, or even on like a screen in an elevator. Grist has a platform agnostic approach that lets them get stories in front of audiences all over the country and the world through syndications, publishing partnerships, and special collaborations. Grist's team believes there's power in collaboration to like not only expand the possibility of reporting, but also just reach in general. Similarly, that's also part of the ethos of the Great Salt Lake Collaborative, made up of 11 news outlets, TV, radio, print, and 5 educational institutions that share content and team up on reporting trips. And together, they've produced nearly 600 stories across digital, print, radio, and television. By partnering, the collaborative like floods the news zone to help Utahns understand the importance of the Great Salt Lake, what contributed to its long-term decline, and what can be done to save it. The group has expanded coverage this year to the Colorado River as well. Along with creating stories for different platforms, the collaborative has done incredibly creative projects to engage audiences in person and other ways, including creating a crowdsourced Twitter page community anthology in 2022. They'll be doing another anthology this year as well. Hosting library events, creating an audio postcard series to collect Utah stories about the lake, holding in-person lakeside tours, creating a book club, holding a trivia night, tabling at events like farmers markets, festivals, conferences, really accessible locations, creating a college journalism class about covering the Great Salt Lake and developing elementary school curriculum. Similarly, at High Country News, we've taken an approach of meeting people where they are, in this case, social media. So we approach social media as serving both our current audience and the audience that we want to have. So we've been working with influencers and content creators who adapt High Country News stories for social media, specifically looking at audiences on Instagram and TikTok in a way that is meant to be both informative and entertaining. Overall, we've really honed our approach on social media to tailor our story presentation specifically for social media platforms. So overall, our strategy strives to be true to the medium itself and not force people to leave the platform. A lot of data shows that when you push for click-throughs, you're likely not to get them, and repeatedly doing so will negatively impact your reach and follower count. And also, Facebook's parent company Meta deprioritizes outbound links. So you really need to think about the approach of adapting the story for a different medium. That doesn't necessarily mean pivot everything to video. But we strive to summarize the key points of the story for social media. And like the bad news is that not everyone wants to click through to read 5,000 word feature. In general, younger audiences are more likely to get news directly from social media than from primary news sources. And also lower income folks are more likely to own smartphone instead of computers, and social media platforms tend to be mobile first platforms. Both audiences in general are less likely to leave the platform that they're currently browsing on. I guess that was as fast as I could have gone through it. So we welcome you to come chat with us. I'm not sure what that setup's going to be like since, unfortunately, Rachel and myself are not able to make it. I'm sure that they can speak to that more. But, thanks.
Thank you so much, Michael. Okay, now we can clap. So as you can see, we have had the misfortune of losing 3 people from the program at the very last second here. Rachel is not at the conference at all. And Michael will be joining Leah at this table over here, talking about poetry and events and other approaches to gathering new audiences. Obviously, Michael is an expert on social media and does that work for, oversees that work for High Country News. So now what we're going to do is we're asking everybody to get up, and move around the room for just about,
5-10 minutes looking at these, thinking about your questions rather than doing questions and answers right here in a big audience. We're going to say, write your questions down, write your questions about AI over here, newsletters here, poetry and events over there, and vertical videos all the way over there. Also, we're interested in knowing, do you have experience with any of these things that you would like to share at the roundtable discussions? If you do, write a short note and put your name on it. And finally, the third question is, how can SEJ help advance your work with in any of these areas? If you haven't thought about that, please put it up there on the sticky notes as well. Let's get up. Let's take a few minutes to do that. And then we'll move back to these round tables and have a really deeper discussion for the rest of the morning.
What
a bummer, exactly. Yeah. I am going to try and get him on Zoom. So let's see.
Yeah, Hey, wrap it up. We haven't started that yet.
Started. We're in like the base where here's your schedule.
Let's regroup. I want to thank everybody for putting up your questions there. This is a technique it's designed to make sure that every question is surfaced and every voice is heard. Because you know how it goes sometimes when you're in a group. Some people will, especially journalists, we're great at like asking all our questions. Some of us are great at asking all our questions. Some of us maybe a little more timid. So it's easy to have a conversation with journalists involved where not every voice is heard. So this is a technique where we're trying to counter that. And the moderators at the tables are going to be looking at these questions and trying to make sure every question is addressed. And anyone who wants to share their experience has the chance to do that. And we are going to set timers on our watches. And we're going to encourage people to move around to the tables to discuss the different topics. Now, because we have some speakers who are remote, we're going to have at Leah's table over there. Leah, wave your hand. Michael from High Country News will be remote on the computer, and you can unmute. We're turning off this microphone.
The main one.
Yeah, they're going to turn that off as soon as I'm done talking. Okay. So then only your mic will be, and your speaker will be projecting him at your table, not around the whole room. And then I'm hopefully going to have John Passmore from Latimer AI, the diverse AI, at this table on my Zoom. And so we have the ability to break up this conversation about vertical video into two tables if you want, and put Lucia at one table and Kristen at another table. And we also have the ability to put Yesenia at one table to talk about newsletters and Emily at the other table. So maybe we'll do that, but right now we're going to use table tent signs. So if you decide to break that up, which might be a good idea, put the table tent on the other one so that when people move around, they'll know where to go to continue to have these conversations. We have the rest of the morning to do this. So we're going to try to set timers.
The moderators are going to set timers for 18 minutes and then they're going to sound and we're going to say, we encourage you to move to another table. But of course, you get up and move around anytime you want. Okay. So that's how we're going to go. And then at 11:15, we're going to wrap up in this room, maybe do a little summaries. We ask the moderators to summarize some key points from their table discussions. And we're going to go pick up our box lunches in the other building. And you're invited to come back and continue the conversation. New people are invited to join us for lunch here. And the special invitation at that point is, now that you've had some discussion on these topics, what are you personally going to do with it? Do you want to workshop an idea you have for a newsletter or for vertical video or for some use of AI or for some event or poetry contest or something? Come back and workshop your own ideas so that you can go home with really action items that help you try to reach out for more new audiences. Are there any questions about our format? Okay. You have a question, Philip? There you go. No. Okay. All right. Thanks so much.